and welcome to the Big Gunner Podcast. Welcome to great to be on here on No Filter Network for the first time, filming with the Greenlight Ventures Group, and it's happy to be around. So what we're a little bit about here is a little bit of everything, but mostly we're about the New York Football Giants. My background and how I know about this team was I was fortunate enough back some 40 years ago in 1984 to get a job as an assistant equipment manager through some experience I had had in the USFL as a young man. And I had a I just had a lot of football people in our family, and my father was a salesman, and somehow I worked my way into getting lucky to get an interview. And basically the job was the head equipment manager was having a baby that summer and needed some help, and the Giants had never had a formal assistant. I had a little bit of a background. I was able to get the job. But one of the more fun parts of this year of 1984 probably was the catapult of the success of the New York Giants of the 80s. Bill Parcells was in his second year. There was a lot of pressure of him coming off a 3-12-1 season that his chances he would be fired. And probably one of my favorite stories that I'll tell real quick before I get into the modern Giants was Bill and I had a great relationship. I was just a little equipment manager, hustled, worked a lot of long hours. I would put in probably 100 hours a week. Anybody who knows anything about an equipment manager or a, you know, a stick man in hockey or equipment guy in baseball is that you never get to sleep at any time. So my with 12 to 16 hour days, and Bill took a liking to me because he put in those hours, and we were usually the last to leave midweek, out of the locker room. So we got to spend time together. He actually drove me home because I didn't own a car back then a few times also. But in our conversations, I always felt like that the Giants were going in the right direction after training camp, but he felt the pressure. And I think in all the public statements that the Giants have made around him and what he had said is that, he wanted to do it his way. And I think that relates to the Giants of now, that I think Brian Daboll should also take a page out of the Parcells book. And no matter what anybody says, he should do things his way. But Bill said, I'm going to get my guys and bring the people he wanted in and keep the players he thought he should keep. And they worked together with George Young in that situation, who was a GM at the time. And I think he did it his way. And my favorite time, I guess, with Bill was telling him that, before Saturday practice that we commonly did. And I just made a joke, but the serious reference, he asked me like, what do you think of the team? And, I could be out of here. We have a tough schedule. And I said, yeah, but I think you made the right decision at quarterback. And he always thought that was funny. I thought picking Phil Sims over then Scott Bruner was really the right decision. In 83, he picked Scott Bruner. Then Sims came in a game to relieve Bruner and got hurt and was out for the year. And the Giants just continued to struggle. So I thought he made the right decision. He always got a laugh and a chuckle about me saying that. But probably the time that I really thought that things were working out is we end up winning the first week against Philadelphia, beating the Eagles. And then in the second game was Dallas at home, who had at that point, we hadn't beaten Dallas in years. It's very similar to the situation the Giants are in now. And we got up 28-0, and there's stories behind. The place was rocking, and we ended up winning 28-7. And as I ran off the field, I was carrying a trunk or pushing a trunk on the turf, and Bill was right by me, and I whacked him on the rear end, and I said, you're going to be around here for a long time. And he had a big smile on his face. I think that was probably my favorite thing, the story about how I thought the team was breeding for success. We later went on to win the playoffs, and 2 years later won the Super Bowl. So that's probably a little bit of my background as far as why I feel I have the right to talk about the Giants. Fan for 40 years. I was jokingly telling a story about how someone knows how big of a Giant fan you are. I said, I just had a health checkup the other day and the doctor found blue in my blood. And I said, I'm a Giant fan. I are a Giant fan. That's why there's blue in my blood. So people thought I'm a little nutty, but same token, that's where how deep I go. So I think what I provide in this knowledge of the Giants and from a gambling perspective, watching games differently, is I had a year that I was able to spend time with teams in practice, being able to watch it. Yes, it was a long time ago. Yes, the game has changed. There's a lot of different angles to where the game is going to go. But I just feel like I've been around it so long from both a gambling perspective, a love of the team perspective, and I think I try to see what we're trying to do. And the Giants are in a situation now that I can only relate to the 1970s when I first became a fan, when there was absolutely zero success, where they flew banners in 1978 about 15 years of lousy football. We've had enough. They were doing a similar action this winter a couple times where some people flew banners over the stadium about people shouldn't be fired and all that. And I'm not, and I was one that stood by the fact that I'm happy that we kept Dable and Shane. I think Joe Shane got, we were there for him to see when Hard Knocks went on. Everybody got, was able to see exactly what the Giants were doing and the moves they were making. Now, I listened to a story about the producers of Hard Knocks who said that they looked at over 1,000 players, both in free agency and draft, and they kind of, you know, itemized this to where they kind of focused on the players, I guess, that either would be Giants or they just missed. You know, so it was really kind of a rigged kind of show where there was kind of like any reality TV show you're going to get is kind of put it in perspective so they can condense it into a 5-part series. But again, I thought it was riveting. I would watch it again from another team's perspective. I thought learning what we can at our age about the offseason, we're not player conditions or trying to be athletes anymore. We're kind of analyzing it from maybe what would be a dream to be an owner standpoint or a general manager standpoint. I think as a fan, that's about the only input you can get. So I listen to a lot of podcasts. I try to follow some guys I think are sharp, even some guys I think are a little off. But I try to get a perspective, and I'm going to give you a perspective of someone who I think knows the game, has a lot of friends who coach and played the game and have a real understanding, diehard Giant fans that I usually consult with, and we talk about things. And I think I give you a perspective. And one of the perspectives I want to start off today is the Saquon Barkley effect, which I talk about all the time. You know, my friends tell me to get over it, this is a situation where, you know, he's gone, let it go, it's over. But the Eagles have a chance to win the Super Bowl. And I think everybody was talking today, if you watch some of the shows, the Get Ups and the First Takes and, you know, Colin Cowards and all these guys saying that Vic Fangio was a big part of it. Well, you know, yeah, they did, but they did bring in a couple new defensive players, two DBs that are really good. Their linebacker that in his first year had over 150 tackles. Vaughn, he's going to go to the Pro Bowl. You know, Jalen Carter started getting better. You could see completely the evolution of him to be one of the better tackles in the league. Probably might be a shade below Dexter or in Dexter Lawrence's, you know, level category there. So to me, I'm like, you know, what did they need? And they got it. And we gave up over $1.5 million, and we bought in three players that I've talked to at length, both on X and on my podcast, that I thought if we changed and got Elmanor and Locke and Singletary out and paid Barkley, I think we'd be in better shape. Would he have had the year he've had? Probably not. But we have done what we've tried to do and Shane tried to do is improve the offensive line. People you talk to, when I walk through, I see somebody with a blue hat on like myself. I always ask the question, like, what do you think? Are we going to survive? You know, kind of joking around. I like to get feedback. And I can tell whether people really know what they're talking about and when they don't. But any feedback to me when I talk about it is good. And, you know, the good that I've heard recently is people understand that this game is based upon, the offensive line. And I think that's where I loved when I was at the Giants. I loved working with the offensive linemen. I used to help Carl Nelson out. He would ask me, as I was a young, small, quick guy, and try to catch me, try to work on his footwork. I liked Brad Benson. I liked, Billy Ard. You know, these are the guys that were kind of the 86 team. That was the catalyst of the offensive line, 86 team. And they gelled and they stayed together. Key with offensive lines, we won in 7 and 12, was our line was together. I think the center was the only player that wasn't on the line, Boss, I think, for O'Hara in 7 and then 11 Super Bowl. So, to me, I look at it like we have to get that part fixed. I think that's why Saquon Barkley was let go, was because he was in a situation where we felt like we had other priorities and to keep a back who was kind of injury prone. And at that point, and I've made this reference, to people, was the back was being, undervalued. You know, I think what we saw this year is Josh Jacobs really was a big factor with the Packers. Derrick Henry, a huge factor in Baltimore. Obviously Saquon Barkley, the biggest factor of all. So I think what we're seeing now is that maybe we ought to lift up that position a little bit more. We got a lot out of Tyrone Tracy this year, nothing like we got out of Barkley, but Barkley stayed healthy throughout the year, which helped them and gained 2,000 yards. And my thought, and this is where I'm going to take this right now, is I think more or less what upset me more, not that Barkley went and the chain didn't get value, was that he went to Philly. You know, we're trying to, the number one thing you're doing is you're trying to maintain, a competitive edge in the division. That's where it has to start. when you're building teams around, it's like if you're in the AFC West right now, you're trying to find a way to get to Kansas City. I'm sure that's what Jim Harbaugh is thinking about now. That's what Pete Carroll's got to have on his agenda. You know, that's what Sean Payton does. Three veteran coaches are going to try to find a way to catch Andy Reid. Same thing that we have here. Our problem now is with the successor who I thought was the best quarterback in this draft, Jaden Daniels. We got two teams we might have to catch for the next 5 or 8 years, which is Philly. We have to catch, obviously, and Washington. And we haven't beaten Dallas. You know, we're 14 out of 15 against the Cowboys. We're down. So we have our work cut out for us in the division. And it starts by not letting good players go into your division. If you're going to have a player that you think has value that can come back to haunt you, case in point with Barkley, you really can't let him go in the division. So that's really kind of what I was most upset about, you know. And turning to this, getting off the Giants now and turning to another part that happened is that we've just seen in the last 2 days that, you know, relating the NBA to NFL, that the big trade in the NBA that took a little bit of the juice away from Super Bowl night right now, the press night, was they're still talking about this Luka Doncic for LeBron James, Luka Doncic trade to the Lakers for Anthony Davis, I'm sorry. And what really makes this thing fascinating is the fact that a 25-year-old player, a five-time All-NBA player, could be traded. And then when you break it down and start analyzing, and I really jumped to the conclusion that this was a way to save the NBA, the way to save the Lakers, keep the main team prominent that people want to root for, that has national exposure. You know, but I thought that the idea is that this was a trade that I think now is saying the owners, listen to people thinking the owners got to make their statement that we're not going to let the players dictate and that anybody's vulnerable. And the comments you heard from, you know, Klay Thompson and a Steph Curry and a Kevin Durant and, you know, players like this are like, wow, look at what could happen now. Maybe these owners are, you know, no one's safe if you can get rid of a player of that magnitude. And now we hear yesterday that Myles Garrett wants to be traded. Well, Myles Garrett trade would probably affect the Giants. And the reason why I say that is we're starting to get a little bit of press now that the thought out of Tennessee is that they're looking at Cam Ward, who I thought would be the of the two quarterbacks, Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. I think we're more of a fit for Cam Ward. But seeing Ward possibly go to Tennessee would now make us think that we might not get a quarterback, because now with Myles Garrett going, this might get into a complete rebuild for Cleveland. Do they want to trade him and get picks? Do they want to trade him along with their pick to get a bunch of picks and move down? Maybe the Raiders want to come up with a trade, you know, to get in front of us. So there's a shot that both quarterbacks might go, and, you know, before us now. And now we're sitting there with the best player available, in my opinion, which be a Travis Hunter, a Mason Graham, a player of that magnitude. Graham being the D tackle out of Michigan, which would be a great pair to put with Dexter Lawrence. And me being an old Giant fan, loving defense, I would love to see Mason Graham be picked here. But again, the Giants have a major quarterback issue that we have to address. And I've put out on previous podcasts on Spotify that you could see that I talk about my quarterback ideas for it. But, you know, what's happening now is we're seeing in all sports, maybe the superstar can go. Maybe there's not, you know, you think you got your guy, and maybe not necessarily the fact that you do have your guy. So I find that the offseason now for the NFL is going to be very interesting. But getting back to the NBA, and I think, because I'm going to make a pick in the NBA tonight, is that the Luka trade to me says even a little bit more. Yeah, there was some about the conditioning, but I really believe this is, again, you know, my own little theory I come up with. I think the NBA I don't know if they could have made this trade toward the end of the week. I think they made it when they had to make it because the trade deadline's Thursday, and I think they didn't want this to be talked about. I think it was a quick trade. From what we understand, it was Dallas soliciting the Lakers, and I think Pelinka pulled a vast one saying why they want to get a Luka. There's got to be something there. I've watched Anthony Davis. I don't know that he's completely engaged since they won the title in 20. He has missed games, but I've heard that Luka is missing an average of 13, 14 games a year. So this is kind of where the game is headed, you know, load management, the players dictate. And I think this is the change. But I also think it's to keep that maybe LeBron's time is either finished. Maybe the Lakers want to move him also. We don't know what could happen, but I think some shakeup in the league this week with the trade deadline coming Thursday is going to be very, very interesting. We already know down here, being a Miami Heat guy, living here in South Florida, that Jimmy Butler is going to be, we believe, is going to be traded. He's been suspended, conduct detrimental to the team. You know, we look at it as regular, average, everyday Americans that go to these games, that how could a guy being paid $50 million just drop and not be able to, you know, play, you know, and finish out his contract? Like, what's wrong with $50 million? It was one thing when a guy was getting paid $350,000 back in 1986 when Lawrence Taylor held out and everybody was mad at him. But today, with the amount of money these players are getting, at least you should show up. Especially, more importantly, with the amount of money that people pay for tickets and PSLs in football, and front row tickets are $10,000 for a game. And if someone's paying, you know, $400,000 for season tickets, and, you know, yes, they can afford them, but you would think that the guy that's the best player who's brought him to two NBA finals would have an attitude enough that he'd want to show up and play. So I think these are the things that I think the NBA has to look in the mirror and say, okay, here we go. Kevin Garnett had some great points he made about how now the guaranteed contracts might be challenged a little bit by ownership now. Be that, why should I give a guaranteed contract when a player can just do what he wants? So we're going to see what happens with Jimmy Butler. I always like Jimmy, a little disappointed in his stance, but, you know, we'll see. But getting to the big game this week, I think there's some interesting, you know, props that I'd like to talk about. I'm going to talk about them with Defoe and Bury Your Bookie on Thursday. But one of the things that I see in this game happening, which is, again, something you haven't really seen, is I'm going to take a chance that Xavier Worthy gets a couple of deep shots in this game and they connect on one. What I mean by that is, I haven't seen him utilized other, maybe short offense to try to take play ball control. I just got a sneaky suspicion that when the big delights are out there and it's going to shine, something's going to be different. And my thing is going to be, Kansas City's going to take some deeper shots than normal. With Mitchell, the young corner, who's fantastic for the Eagles, and DeGene on the other side, and Slay, you're going to see that these guys are going to be challenged. And we know what Worthy ran at the combine. He's the fastest guy in the league, fastest ever combine 40 time. Why not get him on a go pattern and take a chance and have Mahomes use that arm strength and throw one up? I think it's going to happen. So I'm going to tell my clients and people that I like to take the over 56 and a half yards for Worthy. He had, you know, plenty of yards in the UCM and went over in the Buffalo game. And I like him over 56 and a half here. And I also like the over 21 and a half for his longest catch. I think it's a combination bet that you're going to take. I think you'll definitely hit one. Hopefully you get them both. But if he can do it all, if it's 60 yarder, you hit both bets right away. And that's the fun thing about betting these props. And I see where I think all this comes out to is the evolution of gambling. You know, being around it for 40 years and living in Las Vegas, these things, these props that you can play on a nightly basis, which is, people have different opinions, both from a legislative standpoint, from a handicapping standpoint. The guys my age probably aren't going to play these props as often, but, you know, the new age gambler from, you know, now that we're legal since 2018, has been pushed through by FanDuel and DraftKings on fantasy sports. You know, Prize Picks has a huge fantasy thing where you put four picks together and you can bet high or low and bet over. So this is the new age of gambling, and I want to kind of fit my way in. And one of the things I'm liking is I do like Barkley all yards. I saw ESPN bet last week and dropped Barkley's total 25 yards in a night, although the juice went up to 165 minus. But I thought I couldn't be right. And then I saw the Hard Rock was using 112 and a half down here. Now they're at 115 and a half, which I think is more of a number. The Chiefs have not allowed a 100-yard rusher all year. Last week, Cook was looking pretty good, but he only got 13 to 15 carries for 84 yards. So, you know, it was kind of, you know, not utilized enough. But I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think Saquon Barkley will see his touches in this game. But Kansas City, I think one of the big factors in Kansas City is they tackle very, very well. One of the best tackling defenses. I mean, they have our guy Spags, who was our defensive coordinator for two of our victories, and now three with Kansas City, and now looking for his sixth ring, which would kind of make you think that maybe we should take an assistant coach and put him in Hall of Fame if he ended up with six rings. So that's kind of my prop special. I did make a wager earlier on Kansas City, minus 125 on the money line when the line originally came out. I just thought that Kansas City beat Buffalo, the better team, out of the two teams, Washington and Buffalo. I felt the Kansas City under three, I think they're 7-for-7 under 3-point spreads as a cover, as a small favorite in the playoffs, or with Pat Mahomes. I just think, you know, this is my whole source on all this. I just think that when it comes down to it, he's the best quarterback I've ever seen. I argue with the New England fans down here. I just think even though he's only has three Super Bowls, he's been in the league 7 years. He'll be 29. If he wins this week, he'll have four. Brady would have three at 29. I don't know that Patrick Mahomes is going to play to 45 years old like Brady did, but I'm going to bet you that if he does play to 45, he'll probably have a chance just by the organization where Kansas City does. As long as Andy Reid hangs in there, I think he might tie Brady or come close. This team is just really built well. They have money under the cap this year. It's just, you know, they don't make mistakes in the front office. The coaching is spectacular. I just think minus the 1.5, 2 points over the 125 in my case, I just find it hard to see Philly win. I think this is one of the best teams that they've played. Maybe Tampa might have been a little better, but I think there was an intimidation factor of playing Brady in Tampa, you know, and that whole thing that Mahomes hadn't beaten Brady when he lost to him in the championship game his first year playing. But I really think that Philly, this is the best challenge. San Francisco was really good, but they weren't playing this well. This team's playing pretty well. But again, I think, you know, the Rams, who were a questionable playoff team, you know, going back, you know, 8, 10 weeks ago, the Commanders with a rookie quarterback, which never has happened. They're now 0-6 in the championship game, never to make it to a Super Bowl. It just they lined up pretty good for Philly, but I just think now they play the real deal and where the pressure lies. But I think there's a little pressure on Patrick Mahomes more to be the first team to win three Super Bowls in a row. So it's going to be a very fun game to watch. I'm not in love with the game itself. I'm kind of going to make a pick maybe Thursday. I'm liking with this totals dropping down. I like betting against moves in these games only because I just think some of it might be more public money than really sharp money. I think the algorithms and how the industry is setting lines now, I'm much more confident than I was years ago when I had friends of mine that were sharp out when I lived in Las Vegas. And these guys would just bury books and you know, be, you know, watched everywhere they went. They can only bet a certain amount. And, you know, so these guys, I think, are not as good as they have been in the past percentage-wise, at least what I see. Maybe I'm wrong. I've stayed in communication with only a few of them. But, you know, that would be my guess watching line moves and how they were stimulated by and moved by the very sharp player. Now you watch them, and they're really not holding up. I think the first weekend, the line move of more than a point was 1-6 in the NFL playoffs. So you'll see things like this happen. But we're going to get on here now and talk about our picks for tonight. We're going to give out a game in each sport. The philosophy that we have with the handicapping services that I've helped out and consulted with and worked with is we really want to lower the amount of picks. In other words, I know the world today wants the guy picking 5, going 6-0, 6-1, like to do that. But we kind of like our one game a day philosophy. Stay low, better chance of winning. So I'm gonna pick one in each sport tonight just for my opener here. But I kind of like, you know, that Jeff kind of guides me down that row of less picks, and he only gives you one or two outlets when you're on an NFL Saturday, college football Saturday, or NFL Sunday. So I'm going to stay with this philosophy. One of the games that I'm going to gear in college basketball tonight is the Marquette-St. John's game. So I have friends of mine that are connected to, you know, to St. John's and know, you know, Rick Pitino and all. And one of the things, the comments that I got recently was that Rick is basically knows that as long as he keeps winning, things are going to be great. The NIL is hard. Keep coaching. He's got a veteran coach, can get these guys to go. And if the kids buy into you today, I think it helps. Well, look who's at the top of the Big East now at St. John's and Pitino's second year. But they went into a little bit of a buzzsaw. They have a team that probably has the best talent in the Big East and who just got spanked at home by Connecticut. So for my liking, I think this is a game that would put us the winner gets to the top of the division. I'm going to like Marquette, who had success against St. John's last year, plus 2.5 points at St. John's tonight and go for Marquette. And I like him actually outright to probably win the game. So that's my college pick. In the pros, kind of like looking at this, the slate, and one of the teams I've been touting with Defoe is the Portland Trailblazers. So last night I kind of told Defoe, I don't know that I liked the streak. They were 7 straight covers, and they hung in there. They were down early and came back and ended up winning the game in overtime. Again, we got them a plus 4.5 or a plus 160 money line bet if you wanted. But Portland's playing some great basketball. A lot of good young players playing together, getting some guys back off injury. DeAndre Ayton is fresh now. He put up a double-double, 25 and 20 last night against his ex-team. You know, now they're getting five tonight from Indiana, and I just don't know when the well runs dry. I ride him, went against him last night. I'm not sure about that game, but I'm looking at it right now, and I think if I'm leaning, I'm going to stay. Go ride the streak. I think one thing about gambling is that it streaks. I know in betting baseball, one of the things that we do in baseball is you for years and years, when a team will won three in a row, you jump on them. Baseball becomes a run of streaks. Teams win 10, 12 in a row, eight in a row, and you get that little ride up. And, you know, if you're going to get eight in a row and you pick them at three, you know, you're getting five out of six. You're having a successful run. And that's what you kind of look for, is your runs in betting and gambling. I think it's a tough racket. I don't know that anybody could pick consistently at 55%. What we try to do is give you the best information. And what I'm trying to do is limit the amount of picks, because I got myself in trouble over the years being a loser gambler, that you bet more, you try to make the score parlays, your mindset's different, whether alcohol is involved or anything you're doing, and you're betting overnight and you're home late at night and you're in the casinos and all that. You know, it's a tough survival world to do this, but we're trying to get better at it. And through my experience from listening to people, it's probably less is more in this case. So we're going to go with Marquette in game one. I think the NBA, I like Portland a little bit, but my pick tonight's going to be Philadelphia. Philadelphia, without all these guys, are playing much better. Embiid is questionable tonight. He might come back and play. Dallas is still spiraling off that trade. They got beat by 43 to Cleveland on Sunday, and I think, you know, they got a day's rest. But Philly's played pretty well. They gave Boston a run. They were up 26 on Boston and blew a game. So I think they're going to have come out with a little fire. Tyrone Maxey is as good a players, I think, the young guard as there is in the league. I like Philly minus two. I think that they're a favorite in this spot tells me a little bit more. I think one of the things you like to do is read lines. It's going to look at this. You would say, why is Philly even favorite if these guys are out? I know Paul George won't be playing tonight. I'm going to go a little bit with Philly minus two. And last but not least, you know, we're going to go to hockey. And I like to find dogs in hockey. Hockey's a tough grind, nightly grind. And one of the teams that's playing a little better, lost to Dallas on Sunday, is the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I see the Buffalo's laying 175 to them in Buffalo. Now, granted, tough spot, but Columbus winning record. If I'm playing good hockey, I'm going to take my chances and take Columbus plus the 145. So it's tonight the three-game bet is Marquette plus 2.5, Philly minus 2, and Columbus plus 145. So hopefully we go 2-1 for you. If you take my advice, hopefully you hang in there. This is the Big Gunner podcast. Again, we're going to be here on the No Filter Network, throwing out games, throwing out giant love. And I look forward to a long run here. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.